right, so it gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker for this evening, Nathan D. from Santa Maria.
Nate, alcoholic. First and foremost, I want to welcome the newcomers, Jesse, Carlos, and Colin. Welcome home, guys. That's what somebody said when I came back this time. You know, that's been my experience. I find it that I'm the most comfortable in these rooms just because other alcoholics speak my language, you know. I can get vulnerable in here, you know, and I can let you guys know what's going on up here without any judgment, you know, which is something I don't get out there, you know. I also want to congratulate the birthdays, you know, that shows me that this program works. And, you know, just like everybody that came up here and took a cake, you know, you get what you put into this thing. And that's been my experience as well. Relapse is my story, you know, and it always came down to not wanting to do the work and not wanting to surrender myself to what you guys had going on in here, you know. I always had that wall up, right? Before I get any farther, too, I want to congratulate and have a round of applause for Jesse and Katie's anniversary today. So what? And I want to have another round of applause for Miss Katie for putting up with this yahoo. God bless you. I have a sobriety date of July 26, 2016. You know, and it's I gave all the praise and glory to God, you know. That I found by doing the steps and having very good sponsors, you know, that showed me by example. You know, they didn't shove it down my throat. They walked the walk, you know, and but it came down to me having that gift of desperation, you know, and that emptiness that I didn't ever want to feel ever again. I absolutely love this program with all my heart. I do. You know, I can say that with 100% certainty because it saved my life. You know, it saved my life. I grew up in a small town in the Midwest, North Platte, Nebraska. It was little dinky town, North Platte, Nebraska. Go Huskers, you know. I got another Husker fan in here now. Yeah, Brother Jacob. Just actually moved out here from Nebraska, you know, so I'm not alone now. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah. But yeah, you know, me and my family moved out there when I was 9. I was born in Idaho, moved out there. That's when my dad got a job. And, you know, I had my first sip of alcohol at 13. The first three times, okay, so the first two times that I drank, I stole booze from the neighbors, right? And I threw up, and it wasn't very pretty. And the third time, my luck ran out, and I got caught by the cops. And I got a minor possession of alcohol at 13, you know, and it didn't start off too well, but I remember that feeling, you know, that feeling of being able to fit in and being able to look somebody in the eye with my head up. You know, that emptiness was gone, you know. And you know, I thought for the first time in my life that I was okay, you know. And, you know, after that, You know, I kind of slowed down on the drinking just because it scared the shit out of me that I was 13 and I was on probation and I was very involved in sports growing up, you know. And after that happened, my parents wouldn't let me play sports for a year. I had to sit out for a year. And I didn't like that, you know. So through high school and whatnot, I would drink every now and then. I would drink on the weekends. I would party, you know, smoke a little weed here and there. But my sole identity in high school was sports. And being somebody who was always insecure and not liking myself, I was pretty good on that football field and on that baseball field. And that's where I fit in, you know. So that was my outlet through high school. Long story short, I ended up having an injury my senior year of football. And I was looking at going to play some sports in college. But after that injury, I wasn't able to. And I remember going to three or four different doctors, getting other opinions, just because that's what I wanted to do. You know, that's where I saw my potential, and that was it. You know, but they would not allow me to continue playing. And through that process, I got on some pain pills, and I loved the way that made me feel. You know, it was that same thing with the booze. You know, I could fit in. I felt like I was 10 feet tall. You know, I could talk with the chicks, you know, and I just felt okay again, right? After that happened, I got hooked on those pills. What me and my friends would do after my prescriptions ran out is we would drive through the neighborhoods of that small town I grew up in, and we would act like our car broke down in front of houses, you know. We put the hood up, and we go up to the house and ask them to use their bathroom and say, "Hey, my car broke down. Can I use your bathroom?" You know, sure, you know. And then I'd go in the bathroom, get in the medicine cabinet, raid it, find something, you know. And that's what I did for 6 months after that, you know. That was how I got my fix, you know. Us alcoholics and addicts are pretty sly, you know. Definitely find a way to get our fix, and that's what I did. I ended up somehow enrolling into college, you know. So I moved away from home, and I was about 3.5 hours away in Lincoln, Nebraska, home of the Huskers. I remember my first day. It was the night before their first day of class. I moved into the dorm, got everything situated, and went over to my buddy's house to have some beers and celebrate. He had this great idea of trying out some mushrooms the day before my first day of class. And I ended up eating a bunch of mushrooms, and I understand this is Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, but drugs are definitely part of my history, you know. But I ate all these mushrooms, and I'm sitting there with my buddies, and like an hour passed, and I didn't feel any effect whatsoever. I was like, these are bunk. Like, I'm going back to my dorm room, getting some sleep. So I go back to my dorm room by myself. I didn't know a single person on the floor yet where I moved, and I'm sitting there watching TV, and all of a sudden they start just popping out at me, and I start just like completely losing my mind, right? And for the whole night, I was pacing up and down the hall, just absolutely terrified, hearing voices and whatnot. And my college career did not get off to a good start. You know, I can tell you that right now. I somehow managed to get a little school done, you know, show up on exam days, didn't really go to class too much. But I was able to kind of get through my first year, you know. But in the meantime of my first year, I was introduced to heroin, you know. And that added on to drinking heavily was not a good mix, as you can imagine. And as you probably know, some of you. I didn't last too long in college after that, you know. And somewhere in the meantime of that whole phase, I went to my first treatment center. And I was able to admit that I was powerless over other substances, but not alcohol. You know, I didn't have a problem with booze. I could manage that. I just had to get off this other stuff. You know, that was my problem. And so, like, I still remember, and sometimes I reflect back on it. Not too much, but I reflect back of how, at that time, you know, I thought in my whole heart that I was sober, even though I was drinking, even though I was smoking weed, even though I was doing everything else, but what I thought I had a problem with, I thought I was sober, you know, so I mean, I was pretty young at the time and completely naive and not, being able to understand this disease whatsoever, but I really thought I was sober, you know. And there were times, you know, after that and after, like, a bunch of relapses after that, you know, I would, like, think to myself, man, why can't I think like that? You know, why can't I think that I'm sober, you know? Because relapses really messed with me, you know, and I absolutely know I'm not the only one, you know what I mean? But through my first treatment center, I ended up getting out, and I went to meetings for a little bit. I didn't get a sponsor. Definitely didn't work the steps. I was the last one to get here. Usually I showed up late. And I would always leave before the end when we would pray out. Because I didn't want to hold you guys' hands. Because I knew that that was an opportunity for me to have a conversation with somebody. And I was terrified, you know, of just having conversations with people. You know, I did not like the person I was. And I didn't think that you guys wanted anything to do with me. You know, so I would just get out of there as soon as possible. You know, but that would only last a couple of weeks, and then I'd go back to doing what I was doing, you know, and it would definitely get worse, you know. And I ended up going to my second treatment center a little down the road. And in the whole meantime, I didn't have a job. I was just selling drugs out of my apartment in Omaha. And that's what my life was about, you know, how I was going to get my next fix, you know. You know, I ended up having enough again. I went to my parents again, you know, for the third or fourth time, saying I relapsed, I need help, you know. And I remember my dad taking me to my second treatment center at the time. And, you know, I still remember him getting me there and me stepping on that scale. And I weighed 121 pounds, just bones, you know, just complete bones. And I looked over at my dad, my pops, you know, the man I loved, the man I looked up to, and he was in tears, you know. And that was one of the first times I ever saw my dad cry, you know. And the thing about my dad is he stopped drinking when I was three, you know, so he hasn't had a sip of alcohol for 24 years, you know. He didn't ever come to meetings. He's atheist, you know. He didn't work a program, you know, and that was the guy I looked up to. So through my treatment stints, you know, I always thought I could do it on my own because that's what my pops did. You know, that's the man I looked up to, right? And it wasn't until way down the road that I was able to accept the fact that, you know, if that keeps me sober, that's great, but it doesn't keep me sober, you know. So I ended up getting to my third treatment center, and at that time I was a little more willing, but you know, I wasn't even close to being at the point of what it takes to stay here. You know, I got a sponsor. I started working the steps like homework. You know, he would want to meet up with me on Fridays. I would get it done Thursday nights. Fast as I could, right? You know, and I didn't put any thought into it whatsoever. You know, after that third treatment stint, I didn't really have anywhere to go out there in Nebraska. My family had let me move in before in the past, and they knew it wasn't going to do me any good, you know, because they were just enabling me. So in the meantime, I was kind of couch surfing for a little bit, and still going to meetings in Omaha. One day I get a call from my older brother who lives down in Orange County out here, and he told me that I can move out here if I stayed sober. I could live with him. You know, and I was like, hell yeah. You know, I could move out to Cali, you know. Boy from a small town in Nebraska, I was like, hey, let's do it, you know. I'll be able to stay sober out there, right? So I moved out here, and it was just the exact same song, same dance for me. You know, I got a sponsor, didn't really buy into this. Just that same behavior. You know, I'm not surrendering to this. I was down there for a couple months. You know, and I also want to add, you know, just the fact that my brother had the compassion and love to ask me to come out here. You know, something that I'm forever grateful for. You know, he's helped me out so much. You know, the same thing, the same behavior, and there I was getting off of work one day, and that obsession popped up, and I didn't have any mental defense when it came to it, and I thought I could have a couple beers. You know, just how it always started. You know, I went to the liquor store down there in Newport Beach, and I got 2 40s, you know, because that was 2 beers, right?
Yep. Jeez.
It's delusional. Jeez. And I ended up drinking those 2 40s at my brother's house. And a couple hours later, I was on the streets of Anaheim getting a bag of dope, and I was off to the races again, you know? It always starts with a bottle for me. And then I progressed to other substances, but that's what happened again, you know. And I was out for a couple weeks, and my brother didn't know where I was. I ended up going back to the house one night, you know. And my whole plan, because I knew that he wasn't going to let me stay there. My whole plan was to pack everything in my vehicle down there and head to my parents' house again. Right, because I always ran back to mom and dad's place, you know, and I got everything packed up. I was ready to leave, and you know, it's that whole moment's pretty foggy. But I remember telling my brother that I was going out there, and he said, "No, you're not." He said, "If you get in that car, I'm calling the cops." So I was completely loaded out of my mind, you know, and thank God, you know, he didn't let me get in that car. And the following day, with the help of my sponsor at the time and him, they got me into Santa Barbara up here at the cottage. I went in there for a week to detox, you know. And I was beat up at that point. I started to understand that if I did it my way, I was going to die, you know. There was no ands, ifs, or buts about it. And I remember being in the panel for a couple days, and these 3 guys came in from Alcoholics Anonymous on a panel, and still remember it, that he spoke about the contempt prior to investigation, you know, because I always said that AA didn't work, you know, it was a brainwashed cult, you know, all that stuff we hear, you know, but he phrased it in such an elegant way at the time. It was just like, you know, basically, you know, what have you done for AA, right? Have you ever gave it a chance, right? And he was very, he got like right into my face about it. He was very intense, right? And that will always stick with me. You know, that will always stick with me. So I stayed there for a week, and Jose Daniel from here was the alcoholic that picked me up at the hospital. And I stepped out of the cottage hospital, and I saw Jose Daniel sitting in the street in his car, a big old smile on his face. You know Jose. And he's like, Nate! I was like, oh gosh. What did I get myself into? And the first thing he said, you know, he asked if there was anything he could do for me. You know, and I said, "Yeah, can you stop at the gas station? You know, I need pack of cigarettes and a Monster. You know, because they didn't let you smoke in there. They didn't let you have energy drinks. And those were my priorities, right? I had to get those things. He ended up stopping there. I'll always remember just the welcoming feel that I felt from Jose. You know, it's something I'll forever be grateful for. You know, he showed me, you know, what this fellowship's about my first day. You know, just being there for another alcoholic, you know. So I remember heading up here. And this was my first time up here, you know. So I was heading up on the 101 with Jose. And I just thought to myself, like, this is ugly scenery, you know. Like, what is this? You know, like this is supposed to be Cali. Like I was living down in Orange County, and then up here, it just seemed really ugly to me. But my perception was all jacked up too. I remember those feelings too of just being just completely overwhelmed, confused, scared. You know, just full of fear. Absolutely full of fear, not knowing what I was getting myself into. But I ended up getting into a sober living house up here. I have a lot of respect for those houses. You know, those houses saved my life. You know, I got into that house and I started working the steps with my sponsor right away. And thank God that they made us go to meetings every day. You know, because that was the only place I had, you know. But I remember being there the first night, and I was bunked up in this room with five other guys, right? And it was like 11 o'clock at night, and I was just like wide awake, right? Like, oh, gosh. And you know, I had a guy that was sleeping above me snoring, and then a guy beside me farting, and then just all this stuff going on. It smelled like B.O., and I remember, like, stepping outside and calling my sponsor, you know. And it was late, you know. I didn't care. I just called it. I was like, what am I doing here? You know, like, screw this. You know, I was so ungrateful. I was so ungrateful, but that's how I was at the time. I was so grateful. And he says, well, it's better than prison, right? And I said, yeah, it's a lot better than prison, you know. And he just... that just like shows me of how ungrateful I was at the time, you know. I didn't have any gratitude in my life whatsoever, you know. I was completely delusional, completely selfish, you know. My sponsor got me a construction job, and we started driving up to Hearst Castle every day because we were doing work on Highway 1. And we did that for about 6 months. Driving up to Hearst Castle, you know, and being able to ride with my sponsor up there every day and on the way back, that's a blessing. That's a complete blessing. We would talk about that real stuff going on. He had speaker tapes that we would listen to speaker tapes left and right. Earl Hightower, Bob D, you know, Clancy, yeah. And those guys spoke to my heart, you know. But you know, that was my first construction job ever, and I didn't know how to swing a hammer. They told me to get a speed square. I didn't know what the hell a speed square was, you know. I was like, all right, you know. And I remember I went up to the first day with a small framing hammer, and we were doing bridge work, you know. I remember my foreman being like, what the hell is that? You know, like, what are you going to do with that? You know? You know, I have a funny story about that foreman because he just completely rode my ass. It just completely made me feel like that big when I was already insecure, like freshly sober, right? I was just like losing my mind up there, and he would yell at me all day long. You know, because I didn't know what I was doing at all. I remember it was my first resentment was against him, you know, and I was at a meeting, right? And somebody said, you know, pray for your resentments. I was like, all right, you know, I'll try it. And that night I prayed for him, and I got there the next day, and he was gone. They sent him to another job. I was like, sweet. This is good, right? Yeah. This works, yeah. Unfortunately, you know, all resentments don't work that way, you know, and then somebody told me to read page 552, and you know, pray for their health, their prosperity, and their happiness, and do it for 2 weeks, even when you don't want to. You know, I think that's the key word right there, even when you don't want to, you know, and it's worked in my sobriety ever since. You know, I mean, as long as I utilize these spiritual tools that I find in these rooms, they work. But I got to do the work. You know, I got to utilize those tools. You know, I started working the steps. I got to step four, and I found out the causes and conditions. You know, and I found out that alcohol wasn't the problem. You know, it was a solution for a long time. You know, but that alcoholism, you know, that I could reflect back to when I was super young, just having that fear and those insecurities and those defects of character. But it wasn't until I did the work with a sponsor, you know, because I don't know how to stay sober. I didn't know how these steps work, but he showed me, you know, he showed me how it worked. And I did my fourth and fifth, got to sixth and seven. And then I had my first spiritual awakening when I did steps eight and nine. And when I was able to look another person in the eye and make an amends and ask him what I could do to make it right and what I did was wrong. That was my spiritual experience, because in that moment I knew that there was a power greater than myself working in my life, because that's something that I would not do. You know, I knew that God was in those situations where I was making those amends, you know. You know, I also got into service right away. I got into service. And my sponsor early on told me to make my own commitments, such as staying after, wiping down the tables, cleaning the coffee cups, you know, taking out the trash, you know, doing those things to feel a part of, you know, because that was also another thing. I didn't ever feel a part of this program until this time in the rooms, because you know I wasn't willing to do whatever it took, you know, and by doing those things, you know, other members started coming up to me, you know, because they saw me wanting to stay, you know, and I started getting phone numbers, and I started using those phone numbers, you know, and I found out that I didn't have to do it alone. You know, I don't ever have to be alone ever again, you know, which is a beautiful thing about this program as well, you know. You know, and the cool thing about it is God has restored me to somewhat sanity where I can go in into the detox now on a panel and give back, you know, because I was in detox 6 or 7 times, you know, and that's a way for me to give back now. You know, is to go in there and share my experience, strength, and hope. You know, I really like in the big book the daily reprieve. You know, all we have is a daily reprieve contingent on spiritual maintenance, you know. And it's like I have learned in these rooms that if I don't do the work, I put up a wall between me and God, and I act out on old behaviors. And I can run amok in sobriety. You know, I've done some things in sobriety that I'm not very proud of at all. You know, that I had a lot of shame and guilt. But it wasn't, you know, I was able to get honest with the sponsor. And I am currently working through it right now, you know. But it wasn't until I got honest with another man about what was going on up here, you know. And that's the whole thing about sponsorship, too, is you can have a sponsor, but if you don't use them, it doesn't do any good whatsoever, you know, because I have all these crazy things going on in my head all the time, you know, and if I don't let someone else know what's going on up here, you know, that opens the door to the possibility of me acting out on what's going on up here, right? You know, the brotherhood that I'm a part of now in this fellowship is unbelievable. You know, like I said at the beginning, Jesse and Katie got married a year ago. You know, and I was able to be in his wedding. You know, and that was an honor. You know, to be there for another brother, right? And not be loaded. You know, because I had been in other weddings before in the past, just completely loaded, made a complete fool out of myself. You know, and those are people that are on my amends list now. You know, and I still haven't made those amends. You know, so I'm gonna have to keep working at this thing and make those amends someday, right? When God puts that situation in my life, you know, I'll have the opportunity to, you know. But I was able to be a part of their wedding, you know. You know, I thought getting sober meant that I wasn't going to have any fun. It was going to be miserable. But it's been the complete opposite, you know. The happiness that I have today outweighs anything that I had when I was getting loaded. I can tell you that right now. You know, it's a genuine, you know, happiness. And we get to experience just laughter and joy in these rooms that is something I never want to forget, you know. And it continues to happen, you know. But I have the power of choice today whether I want to be a part of this or not. And there's some days I wake up and if I don't invite God into my life right away and ask Him to direct my thinking, you know, and ask for the knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry that out, I'm super selfish. And I start isolating and I start getting down on myself, you know. I become irritable, restless, and discontent, like it says in the book. And, like, everything in this book hasn't ever lied to me, you know. It's like it says, you know, if we do the work and we perform God's work well, we'll be rocketed into a fourth dimension, you know. And that's happened, you know. It also says if we don't do the work, we'll become restless, irritable, and discontent. And that's happened too, you know. But thankfully, I haven't picked up, you know. Also, another thing, you know, is I have the honor and privilege to work with other men in recovery today, which is a freaking miracle, man. You know, it's a miracle that I can pass this on to other alcoholics. And they help me more than I help them, I swear, you know, because I'm able to get back into the steps, you know. I was just actually got done working step 6 and 7 with a guy. I love that step. I love those steps, you know. Just getting rid of all that crap that I had for so long, you know. It's such a freeing feeling, you know, that I never thought I would be able to do, you know. But it wasn't until I surrendered to this program and surrendered to the God of my understanding, you know. And he has the ability to renew me, you know, and cleanse me, you know. And I'm able to help others today, you know. But, you know, I just have so much respect and love for the men that have came before me, you know, who I, early on, I didn't have a lot to say, which I think is a very valuable asset to have early on, right? And I shut my mouth and I watched, right? And I observed what you guys did, you know. And the old timers, my home group is the men's stag on Thursday nights at the Orchard Presbyterian Church. And those old timers just said, hey, man, if you want what we have, do what we do, you know. You have to work at it, you know. And they're the ones that gave me my first service commitment. You know, the timing commitment was open there, and somebody was like, Nate, we'll do it. And I was like, all right, you know. And I still have a commitment at that meeting to this day. I have the coffee commitment now because commitments have saved my ass more times than not. You know, when I don't want to go to a meeting and I have a commitment, I go, you know. But I've had men that have just showed me, you know, not only how to stop drinking, but how to become a man, you know, and how to respect women, you know, and how to be a friend, and how to be a better employee. You know, I've had the same job for a while now, which is a miracle too. You know, because I would have. I think the longest I ever had was like 6 months with the same job. You know, and I've been with this job for like a year now, you know? Which is a good feeling. You know, but that's Alcoholics Anonymous. That's not me. You know, that's Alcoholics Anonymous right there. You know, what am I doing on time? I think I'm pretty good. All right. What's that?
It's only 15, bro.
Come up and finish it, bro. that's enough out of me. I would just like to, if you're new, we're here for you, you know. You have to do the work. You know, you have to be at that point where you're willing to do the work. Service, unity, and recovery, you know. And I find it that if I have all three of those in my life, I'm closer to God, and I'm at peace, and I'm comfortable in my own skin, right? And I'm happy, which are things that I've never had before in the past, you know, and it's all a result of this program, you know, and the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. But that's enough out of me. Thank you.
Let's give our speaker, Nathan, another round, huh?